21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus. She's a worry now, walking down this same highway. I don't see nothing new, but I feel a lot of change. And I get the strangest feeling as I'm heading for the light.
Oh, yes. You know who that is? That's the Traveling Wilburys. And you just listened to good old Uncle George Harrison. Wouldn't it be good to have him back on the radio here on 21st Century Radio? Well, this is 21st Century Radio, and I'm what's left of Dr. Bob Hieronymus in this incarnation, and our executive producer, research assistant, Laura Kortner, who beats me up and throws me down the steps every now and then because she's bigger than I am and she's smarter than I am. And it's our engineer. Engineer is Anna Caroline Caruso. My gosh, I wonder if she is related to you-know-who. Huh? Who's that? Well, my producer doesn't know, but... Oh, yes! No? Andre Caruso? Yeah, well, is that right? Huh? Okay, let's set up straight out there. Eyes straight ahead, no talking, and you can chew gum. You know rules and regulations around here, right? Huh? Okay, well, in early 1971... I began a hobby in collecting E.T. manuscripts, which grew out of my using various Egyptian, Hebrew, Sanskrit, and Atlantean scripts in two of the murals I completed at Johns Hopkins University in 1969. The first mural, as they call them here in Balmer, first mural called The Apocalypse at Levering Hall, and a second one being done for the postgraduate students called the Lord's Prayer. Boy, now, do you know the history of the Lord's Prayer? Well, we haven't got time for it now. All right. That was because the graduate students came to me one day and said, "What's wrong with you? Why are you doing murals for the undergraduates and not us?" Well, it's because I didn't know they even existed in that time. All right, so public television filmed a half-hour documentary of my life, and both of these murals are a major part of that honor. And as you know, I've just completed restoring the 2,700-square-foot Apocalypse mural and have been asked by Johns Hopkins University to address their alumni this coming April. However, you can see it anytime you want because it is open 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. daily at Levering Hall. I began to see parallelism between some of these ancient and extinct languages. Well, you can imagine my thrill when I learned, yes, you should have seen me when I saw this book, when I learned of How to Talk to an Alien by Nancy, and pronounce this correctly, Duterte? Well, I'll get corrected on that in a second. Published by our friends at New Page Books this year. And Nancy is with us for both hours tonight. Now, who is she? Well, she's known as the Skeptical Psychic and a securities litigation attorney who became a trained psychic detective and remote viewer trained in military CRV methods. A magnum cum laude graduate of Princeton University. Hey, I wonder if she knows our friend Dr. Elaine Pagels up there at Princeton. We twisted the night away with her. Now, she is a frequent media guest on shows such as Coast to Coast AM and also hosted her own weekly CBS radio show. She is certified in intuitive gestalt psychotherapy and the author of several books, including Psychic Intuition. Everything you ever wanted to ask about were afraid to know. That's what I get for 3 hours sleep last night. Now, her websites are the skepticalpsychic.com and talkalien.com. Gosh. All right. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Nancy.
Thank you very much.
Are you sitting up straight?
Moderately, yeah.
Well, that's good enough. We'll let you. You can be moderate in all things. By the way, what do you know, Elaine? I mean, excuse me, Dr. Elaine Pagels at Princeton?
You know, I didn't know. In fact, I didn't even know she was at Princeton. I didn't know her when I was there. I've certainly, you know, researched her and know all about her and have seen her on TV and all that kind of stuff. I think she's fantastic.
Isn't she? Wow. She really is. Yeah, she's
Quite imagine her twisting the night away.
Well, she did with us in a way. Yeah. We had a pretty good time. Well, when, how, and why did you begin your study of ancient and extinct languages?
Well, first of all, I have a feeling that you probably know way, way more than I do.
Oh, I don't think so.
Ancient and I'll bet you do.
No way. No way. No way.
Okay. I didn't start out studying that at all. Well, okay, let me back it up. When I was at Princeton, I got my degree, it was BA, I got it in Romance languages. So that's what I got trained in languages. And when I was there, I was studying some German, and I've also studied some Thai. You know, all of those being modern languages. And yes, I studied, you know, Old English and Old French and all that, and they're like different languages. But I have never, made a study of the truly ancient languages. What's happened is since I got into researching alien languages, I've discovered certain relationships. And the way that happened was actually very strange. I was down in Florida. I was down there for a wedding. I was staying at a hotel, and I was wandering back through the hallways, and there was this woman who had set up like a trunk show of jewelry, you know, in front of one of the boutiques.
Oh, yes, I remember this story. This is wonderful. Go ahead.
And it was just, and I like jewelry, so I'm looking at all of the sparkly stuff. And the woman, she's got three very long tables. She grabs me from one end, drags me down to the other, and said, "Oh, you've got to look at this necklace. You know, it's phenomenal. It's terrific." And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, well, okay, it's got these seven they were maybe like 3-inch long leather pouches attached to it. And I'm thinking, okay, it's all right, but I kind of like the sparkly stuff down on the other end. But this woman, the saleswoman, and she's also the designer, she wouldn't let me go. She said, "Oh, you have to see it. It's spectacular. These are ancient. They're 19th century Ethiopian scrolls on the inside."
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, okay, that's interesting." She hands me all this literature, you know, from eBay, tells all about these kinds of things. I'd never heard of them. They're called kitabis. And they don't do them anymore. And they were, you know, as I read about them, they're like little magical protective scrolls. They're handwritten by the priests in Ethiopia, in the Ethiopian church. And they're written usually in goat's blood. Some of them have illustrations on them. And they're written in this, you know, the whatever the Ethiopian language was. And I'm looking at them. As soon as I look at some of these pictures, because you can't take the scrolls out, they're sealed. But I'm looking at the ones on eBay, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. First of all, the illustrations look an awful lot like gray aliens. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, I'm looking at the written language, which, you know, I didn't know it, I didn't read it, whatever. And I learn that it's called, I'm probably not going to pronounce it right, but Gies or Gies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it dawns on me, whatever this language is, it looks stunningly like some of the alien alphabets or alien languages that I've been researching.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman knew nothing about me. Nothing. And so I said, you know what, I have to do this. So I got the necklace. And then, you know, the next few months I'm looking and I realized that the original Book of Enoch was written in Gies.
Yeah.
And that I think there are only two remaining original copies of, and I think the only one that's written in Gies is the one that's owned by the Vatican. And, of course, everybody knows about the story of, you know, the Book of Enoch and that connection to aliens. So for me, it was just one of those, you know, it was as if, now let me back it up. Aliens, in the way that I have researched, the way that they communicate in a variety of ways. It's not just, you know, language, like human language. It's many, many different ways. But one of the ways is through synchronicity. And I do believe that that was one of those moments where I, and probably this woman, were being directed. And there is no way I ever would have figured that out because I'm just not that bright.
Come on.
Serious.
I can't believe
the fact that this woman just grabbed me. I mean, I wasn't even looking at that necklace. I wasn't anywhere close to it. And she goes on and on and on like that was her, you know, the star of her entire trunk show. And she knew nothing about me. So I do think that that was one of those moments where probably we were communicated with so mm-hmm. that would happen, so that I would then understand something a little bit deeper and richer about alien language.
Wow. What a story. Boy, and it's real. That's wonderful.
It's real.
Now, I'm going to, you know, I'll get into the questions in just a second. I got to mention this. I mean, on page 146 is my greatest hero on the planet.
Aww.
And I would never expect it to see this in most of anybody's books anywhere. Dr. John Dee. I wanted to be in my Halloween costume at one time was Dr. John Dee. And of course, nobody knew who he was. And they'd say, "Who are you?" And I said, "I'm Dr. John Dee. And I'm holding my hieroglyphic monad and I'm showing you this." And they said, "What?" I can't use the language they did, but they said, "What the hell is this all about, Hieronymus?" But anyway, thank you for putting Brother John Dee in here.
The book wouldn't be complete without him. I mean, he's like a George Washington of this whole field.
Yeah, he is. Maybe we'll get back to him before, because we got to get more serious here. But this book was such a thrill for me. When I first got it, I wanted to read it right away, but I thought to myself, "Well, I got seven other books to read. I can't do that." And so I set it, put it in the middle of my bed, and every night I would read one or two pages. And then I realized finally, a couple of weeks ago, that the great moment was here, and that is tonight, because I've been looking forward to this for a long time. I know you think I'm exaggerating and all the other, but I'm not. I'm not, Nancy.
You're unbelievably kind, and I really appreciate it.
Well, all right. Well, now we'll get on some of the hard questions and see if you can answer these.
Yeah, right.
Let's find out if you read your own book.
Let me dispel any type of respect that you had at all.
All right. Well, we'll give you a shot at that.
Okay.
We're fair. We're fair and balanced. You heard that.
All right. Let's go.
Excuse me. All right. So why is it relevant or important to want to learn how to talk to an alien?
Right. And for people who haven't had the opportunity to speak with an alien or understand that aliens are even there and have absolutely no experience and therefore no interest in any of this stuff, I would only suggest take a quick look at, a review of some of the military encounters with alien craft. And if you start to understand that they can violate our military and commercial airspace, they're turning on and off our nuclear weapons and missile systems, they have unbelievable mind control abilities. I mean, that is maybe harder to understand in terms of documentation, but it's absolutely true. They're abducting people out of their bedrooms or anywhere, driving along roads. And, you know, once you see the capabilities that they have to control, interact, and interfere with our human societies, it becomes, I think, just, you know, that is like priority number one. Why, and I don't understand, why hasn't this been done or thought about an awfully long time ago?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really get it. I understand that the government has very, very quietly behind the scenes been working on different types of communication interpretation and, you know, different types of cryptography techniques and that kind of thing. But they're not being made public. And, you know, the more, it's like two heads are better than one. The more people you get involved in working on a puzzle, the better the odds are of getting it solved.
That's
so
great.
It doesn't make sense to me that they haven't really made this study of alien languages a much bigger deal.
Well, I agree, and I vote for that. But we have to have a timeout because we are fair and balanced. We have
okay.
to have a timeout here on the playing field. Do you have a good curveball? Do you play baseball?
No, not at all.
Well, I'll show you a good curveball every now and then. First,
right.
I have to teach you a slider, but. First, we got to take a break here on 21st Century Radio with our guest, Nancy Duterte. Is that correct?
Good enough. I'll go for it.
Okay, fine. I'm just going to call her Nancy, though. How to talk to an alien. Can they speak our languages? Can they read our minds? What are they trying to tell us? New Page Books. Nancy has two websites to check out, www.theskepticalpsychic.com and www.talk.com. Alien.com.
Hello, this is Uri Geller, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Whoa, boy, that almost blew me away there, Yuri. I remember when Uncle Yuri came into our studio, he took over. Well, we let him take over for a couple of hours. And boy, if we get time, Nancy will tell you a great story about Uri Geller. There they go. You know who that was? Yes. Who cares? All right, okay. I'm going to ask you question number two since you did so well on question number one. You ready?
Yeah, did I pass?
Yeah. Well, you got an A.
Oh.
Yes, you got an A.
Okay.
So, but look, I'm tougher now because here's question number two.
Right.
All right. Now, have there been any official attempts to communicate with extraterrestrials?
Yeah, there have been quite a few. And in my opinion, they've sort of, the ones that we know about, I think, have been almost ridiculous. I mean, you had the golden plates, I believe, the gold plates that were sent off with one of the Voyager ships in hopes that maybe somebody would pick it up, you know, as it went wandering through outer space. And I believe it was sent out, I think, by... Drake and Sagan, who
Correct.
Did most of that work, and it had a little phonograph attached with, I think, some instructions on how to operate a phonograph. And since that was done, and I think that was, that had to have been somewhere in the 70s, who's using we don't even use a phonograph anymore. Anyway, and it had, you know, images of all of our, you know, things around the globe, and it had samples of many different languages so that, you know, they could sort of get a general gist of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have SETI sending out its radio messages targeting specifically, or they sent out a message, again, I think this was sent out in... somewhere in the 70s, 74, I've forgotten exactly when. I could have that wrong. But they targeted a particular galaxy. I don't know if it was Andromeda. I've forgotten again. But and they figured it was the radio waves would take roughly 25,000 years to get there. And then if anybody happened to be there to pick them up, then and if they happened to want to respond, they would take another 25,000 years to get back to us. At which point, I mean, really? So that just didn't make any sense to me. On top of that, it automatically didn't make sense to me that they're using radio waves, which just seems, even to me, it seems archaic.
Yes, of course. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. Yes.
Thank you.
I agree. Yeah, you know. But I got to tell you something, though. I still use my record player.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm one of those. I'm 50 years behind the time.
One of my heroes was Dr. Oliver Sacks, who just recently passed away, and he had written me this letter, and I forget why. I think I'd asked him about psychic abilities and whether he'd ever thought about it, because he was really a pioneer in the field of neuroscience. And he sent me back a really sweet letter. This was back around, I don't know, 2001, something like that. And I looked at it and thought, oh, my goodness, he's using a typewriter. You could tell, by the way, it was like Hunt and Peck, mm-hmm. you know. And it was sweet. I mean, he was just on a different technology. And some of us stick with different technologies for whatever the reason.
Well, I didn't even get to the typing technology. I look up to, you know, I told you I'm half a century behind. But fortunately there's you around, so that puts us in good shape, especially uh-huh. since you have in this book a terrific bibliography. I'm so pleased by it that if anyone wants to know anything about some good sources, go to this index and the bibliography. It makes a big... I know most people don't pay much attention to that, but I had a wonderful time reading that because there were a lot of my friends in it.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Yeah, well...
I think you knew Ingo,
yes,
correct?
Yeah, you'll hear from him, and I understand he's going to be on the air in about 8:50. He's joining us. You will hear him.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. We he and I used to have some of the strangest experiences. We don't need that. We don't need any of that. But do aliens communicate by means of vocalized sounds or telepathy?
Well, that was the thing. Everybody always talks about the telepathic communication, and usually, you know, anything you read about people who claim to have been abducted or have had some kind of contact, they almost always talk about telepathic communication. And when I was reading through David Jacobs' work, he's an abduction researcher, and I was reading what he was saying about it, he said, well, you know, in all abduction scenarios, it is only telepathic, be it alien to alien, alien to human, or human to human. And then when the human is returned back to planet Earth, or back to wherever they started from, then they lose all of their telepathic abilities because, as he says, you know, we all know humans don't have telepathic abilities. And there were a couple things that struck me as just totally wrong with that. First off, and as you mentioned, I have written a book called Psychic Intuition, Everything You Ever Wanted to Ask But Were Afraid to Know. And I talk about how you can train into certain gifts. And as you know, I mean, Ingo was, you know, he was the guy. He was the big proponent of, you know, you can train all this stuff. And I agree with him, and I'm a perfect example. I was not psychic before I trained. I've trained into being a psychic detective. I've trained into being a spiritual medium. I've somewhat trained into medical intuitive abilities, although I had some natural ones before that. I've trained into remote viewing. You know, so anybody could do it. And I always say, you know, if I can do it, anybody can. So that's the first thing. Yes, we do have telepathic abilities. And the second thing was that I did a lot of research and discovered that I found tons of cases where and these are well-documented cases of abductions, where the aliens not only communicated telepathically, but also vocalized, you know, so they were speaking languages or speaking some type of audible type of a language.
Boy, that was really very fascinating. when you got to talk about, let's see, the, I'm trying to find the right section here. There's a whole series of humanoids in 16th century China, aliens in Brazil, tall white aliens in Las Vegas, Nevada, green skin aliens in Poland, and more. And then you note that these beings, oh my goodness. You know, I missed my point here. I got so excited by this, but yeah, I'm sure you. I don't think you've ever done something like this.
Me, careening off the road.
Yeah, but I was so excited to get to this point that their language was more grunts.
Oh yeah, I mean a lot of these. What's interesting, you know, if you're also hanging around expecting an alien to be communicating audibly. You have a few things to consider, like do they have the proper anatomy or the organs, the features to be able to produce speech like we do? I mean, mm-hmm. Do they have a mouth, larynx, vocal cords, lungs, nose, ears, all those kinds of things? Some of them do, some of them don't. So you have to be very careful about you know, what you expect from them. And I have given as an example, you know, if you assume that ears are, you know, sort of a component of usually being able to conduct a conversation, because you got to hear back and you got to hear yourself. It's harder for deaf people, for sure. But, for example, if you're looking, if the the so-called insectoids, the mantis type of aliens, if you look at them, they're generally described as not having any ears. And if they're anything like our earthbound insects, they do have ears. But they're going to, they have ears in weird places. The praying mantis, the insect, has ears on its abdomen. Crickets have them on their forelegs. Frogs have them internally as lungs. They use their lungs to hear vibrations. So they could have the organs to be using for speech, and simply, you know, we wouldn't know it, and we would think, no, they can't speak, but maybe they can. Mm-hmm. So, but my point is, once you figure out whether they're able to produce vocalized sounds, they might not be human sounding. A lot of these aliens have been described as buzzing like bees, barking or yelping like dogs, or sort of chirping or twittering like birds.
Yeah.
So they may make, and even if they're speaking human languages, they may be making simultaneous sounds that are off the charts in terms of, you know, our hearing capacity, which goes up to, I think, up to about 20,000 hertz.
Well, I couldn't correct that even if it were wrong.
So I still get an A?
Yes, of course. Well, yeah, but, you know, I think maybe someday you'll get an H. Remember H's?
No.
I only got one H in my life. Basically, it means honor. It was they used to give A pluses, but then my one professor who was a philosopher gave me an H, and it was the most exciting thing for me in the world.
That is.
But I told other people that, and they didn't know what it was, so it wasn't very impressive.
Well, it's kind of counterintuitive because it kind of goes on like below F.
Yes, that's right. I guess you're right. It got worser all the time.
There you go.
Now, friends, can you understand why you got to get a copy of this book? You're not going to get – there's no other book like this, period. And this is too early in 2016 to say that this is the best book I've ever read in 2016, because we got a long way to go. But I got to tell you, this is right at the top. Now, you're thinking I'm exaggerating, but boy, I needed to see other people pay attention to this, because people used to make, when I'd say, get involved with this, they'd say, what are you wasting your time doing that for? And now I got lots
really?
Of reasons. Yeah, now I can tell.
Really? That's interesting.
I'll say, go talk to my mentor. Nancy will tell you why it's so important.
Now I know you're pushing it now.
No, I'm telling you the truth. Now,
see, I knew that it's like the Oscars. or the Golden Globes. You know, they always wait till like the week right before they come out with the latest movie.
That's true.
So whatever is freshest in the brain is going to get the top thing.
Well, I'm sure they're always fair, and they never take advantage of anything. Now, how many? It's like that ad we heard. How are we going to restore America? Well, one basic thing you got to do is end Citizens United, and corporations aren't people. But I'm afraid we're speaking to preaching to the choir there. They're not going to pay attention to that. That was the Supreme Court that did it to us. But they had a lot of We get out of that. Excuse me.
I'm sorry. I have to stick with you on that, because speaking as an attorney and somebody who, you know, I watch politics relatively carefully. Actually, I sit in my local government. And the Citizens United case, when that came out, I said, oh, my goodness, we have just watched the death of our democracy, and there's no way out of this.
Boy, are you smart. Damn right. That's the truth. As a matter of fact, the mural I did at Johns Hopkins University and finished in 1969 was just about that, which was we were no longer a democratic republic, and we were moving towards a corporate oligarchy, and I was basing that on study the history of General Electric, or you study Chiquita Bananas, or you study, there's so many corporations, and I included them in the mural. And Johns Hopkins is probably the only university that it would ever allow a discussion to take place on their 2,700 square feet, a room, a stairwell, two ceilings, all about the same thing.
Wow.
And I am so thrilled that they have decided it's that important that the alumni of the university need to hear the story behind it. But we need to take a break here. And when we come back, yes, we're going to be giving away a copy of the book tonight. But there are other ways to get a copy of this book for free. And we'll tell you about that when we get back, too, with our guest, Nancy. It's called Nancy Duterte. Something along those lines. How to talk to an alien. Can they speak our languages? Can you read read our lines? Yeah, I think they can do all of that. But there's something that she says, and we haven't talked about it yet, but something that says that there's something we can do that they can't, especially in the deals with how deep our psychic abilities can be. I may have that a little bit wrong, but she'll correct me. I'm used to being corrected all the time. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Oh, by the way, you need to get to our website, www.theskepticalpsychic.com and www.talkalien.com.
Hello, this is Ingo Swann, the author of Penetration, The Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy. And you're listening to the wonderful 21st Century Radio with the amazing Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Oh, boy, it's so good to hear him again. I almost cry every time I think of this. Our guest is Nancy Duterte. The book is How to Talk to an Alien. Can they speak our languages? And again, I want to give you out her web. You need to get this book. You need to. Hey, look. Let's make a deal. We're going to make a deal, Nancy. The deal is this. If you buy a copy of this book, How to Talk to an Alien, and you can prove it, and it's easy to do because you guys have done this before, and you can prove it, give us a copy of the receipt, and we will send you any book that my wife or I have written, or any DVD, or any book, or whatever, from going all the way back almost 30 years. We still got books from scholars that cover the whole government. So all you got to do is buy it, make sure we get a receipt, and know it, and we will give you anything you want, except for my books on Dr. John Dee. You're never going to get those books. All right? Okay, that's the deal. Now, you ready for the next question?
Yeah, I just want to say, first of all, I think you're awesome. And second of all, you have me crying because I didn't expect to hear Ingo's voice.
I'm sorry.
No.
He was so much joy. I'm telling you. One of the things we like to do is he knew good cigars.
Well, I don't know about that.
you don't? You guys didn't sit around and smoke cigars?
No, in fact, one of the first things I ever said to him, because he wasn't talking, and I was blabbering, and I said, I was just trying to make small talk, and I said, well, you know, because he had his cigar that he held in his tweezers, and it looked ridiculous to me, and I couldn't figure out what the heck he was doing. And I said, I was trying to be polite, and I said, well, you know, my father sometimes smokes a good cigar after dinner. And Ingo just looked at me and said, I never smoke good cigars. And that was that. He had me, I have held his cigars for him while he went ducking into stores in New York City buying stuff, and I'm standing out on the street holding his cigars, and they were always really bad cigars.
Well, I guess maybe he's received the first good ones from us. Well, yeah, let's get into this part. Your mentor was our friend Ingo Swann, who joined us frequently here on 21st Century Radio. Please tell us about your relationship with Brother Ingo. So few people really know, well, they know what he's accomplished, but what kind of a person he was. He was really something for us. By the way, his artwork was exhibited with mine for about a year this past 2015 at AVAM, along with Jimi Hendrix's artwork.
Oh, you're kidding.
No kidding.
Wow.
Did you ever like Jimi Hendrix?
Of course.
Hooray for you. Hot dog. We're going to give you a Jimi Hendrix guitar pick from his family.
Oh, my goodness.
You have just won a Jimi Hendrix guitar pick. Okay, my producer is making faces at me. Okay, so now I'll get back to I told you, she's my boss. And I cannot step out of the line.
What? I'm beginning to have doubts about that. I got a feeling that you do a fair amount of your own direction there.
Well, sometimes I do. But please, tell us about your relationship with Ingo. This is a pretty sacred thing as far as we're concerned.
Actually, you know, I did write about some of, you know, how I met him initially in my book, Psychic Intuition. You probably knew him way better than I did.
I don't think so. We got together a number of times, but gosh, you were studying under. I wasn't studying under him. He pulled me up in New York one time with my friend Dr. Krippner, and he said, "We're going to test you and see if you can do anything up here." And I was trying to. I don't know why I was trying to hit a certain. Number, and I couldn't do it, and I got out of that, and Ingo looked at me very strangely at that time, because before that, we never talked about that kind of stuff. But you
really
had much better experiences than I did with him.
Well, I don't know about that, but I wrote a thing I have one sentence in my book, which, you know how sometimes when you write a book, sometimes there are things that you just say, yeah, I said it right. And I had one sentence in here that has always struck me as like, I just said it right about Ingo. And it said, Ingo was at once quixotic, charming, arrogant, sincere, contemplative, aggravating, funny, and cantankerous.
I like that last word, cantankerous.
And I said several times when I went in to talk to him initially, he refused outright to answer my question simply because he didn't like it. That I felt like I was back at school again. Well, maybe something closer to Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry.
Yeah.
He would just shut me down. If he didn't like what I said, or he disagreed with me, he would start pulling books off of his. He had tons of books, and they were all dusty. And he'd pull them off of his bookshelves, and mostly he was looking at definitions. He loved definitions of things because everything had to be super precise with him. And not only that, but you could, I think he felt you could find the answers to mysteries inside the words. Mm-hmm. And that sort of stuck with me a lot. So you know, for example, I mean, I said, "Oh, well, I guess you're a psychic, right?" And immediately he just bristled up and said, "Oh, absolutely not. You know, I am in no way a psychic." I said, "Okay, I'm sorry, but you're psychic, right?" "No, absolutely not." And then he got irritated. He stopped talking, and he started pulling dictionaries and things off the shelf. And he showed me. And what he was showing me was basically that the word psychic is so unbelievably vague. It's like a giant catch-all garbage bag of anything that people don't understand that you sort of toss in there as, you know, one of the skills. And so I kind of said, "Oh, okay, I get it." I didn't get it at the time, but I do get it now. But there was something about him. I mean, he was a left-brain thinker and a right-brain thinker.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he had started out, I think he wanted to be a bacteriologist or something like that. But he was, you know, he was a scientist, but then he got into this. First of all, he got into art, but cosmic but exceptionally precise kind of art, and, yeah. And it's hard to explain.
Oh, it is beautiful.
Yeah, it was stunning.
And it was such a good time to meet with his mom and his sister and everything. They all came down.
So you see, you've met them all. I never got a chance to meet them. I heard about them. I never got a chance to meet them.
Well, it's not my fault.
Well,
you're not going to blame me for that. I had nothing to do with it. I was just twisting the night away with somebody else, you know.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Elaine.
Thank you for letting us know a little bit about that. One last thing. Please tell our audience what this man accomplished.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. I once interviewed a fairly well-known psychic down in the Edgar Casey Institute down in Virginia Beach. She said, "You know, I think that once this whole thing with remote viewing really catches on, it's going to catch on big. Why? Because finally men are going to finally understand that there's some value to clairvoyance."
It's about time.
And I think she was onto something. And Ingo, being the creator, the founder of this entire, you know, weight package clairvoyance, he made it a tool. And when it became a tool, it became acceptable to all different branches of society. And that was huge.
And certainly, he is one of the great Americans as far as I'm concerned. I'm sure you probably feel the same way. And I wish we could take time and talk more about him. But he's not, he didn't write your book. So we're going to go back to your book.
But
okay?
Influential in its creation. One of the last conversations that I had with him was about aliens.
And did you talk about the experience he had on the moon?
Oh, yeah, we had talked about that before.
Well, I think that's probably one of the reasons why we don't go back there for now.
Oh, yeah. kidding.
Yeah. Well, how many languages do aliens speak?
Well, if I knew that, I'd be a lottery winner or something.
Yes, you would have won $17 billion the other day.
Something big.
Yeah.
Okay, so the way that I look at this in my book, How to Talk to an Alien, is if you want to figure out, first of all, you know, once you've decided, okay, some of them can speak, then the question is how many languages, and are they speaking human languages or are they speaking alien languages? In order to get that answer, you've got to go backwards and look at, ask yourself the question, how many different species or races of aliens are we dealing with?
Yeah.
And I have heard estimates, and the initial estimates, actually I was just listening to something that Bob Dean was talking about, and he was saying back in the 60s or so, it was believed, I guess, in government circles that there were 4 different species visiting us. That has since, you know, it's expanded quite a bit. I've seen the estimate of 4. I've seen, you know, 57, 82, 160, and I've seen something that's in the 300s, and I'm sure that they're more than that. And I don't think anybody has a complete lock and handle on the number because they have the apparent ability not only to look just like us, but also to shapeshift and to materialize, dematerialize, and show up whenever they want to, or from unusual locations, such as subterranean, from other dimensions, from other galaxies. So it's difficult to say. But what we do know, and what my research has shown, is that some of them have the capability of speaking hundreds of languages, alien and human, and just naturally, because some of them, some of these races of aliens seem to have very high IQs, and that sort of goes hand in hand with language ability. Some of them are using different types of technology that enable them to switch between languages so they can communicate with the human recipient. They carry little spheres and balls and wands and boxes and things like that. Some of them have knobs on their that they can adjust, like on their headsets. And some of them apparently have an ability to bounce back information with motherships that apparently are outside of our atmosphere that specialize in language and language translation. So they're doing this in many, many different ways. And by the way, some of them don't seem to have the ability to communicate with us. So they do, you know, body language or sign language. That was the case of the guy I wrote about in Poland. There were small, green-skinned aliens with apparently webbed fingers, and they couldn't speak Polish. They couldn't seem to speak any human languages, so they just did sort of, you know, sign language. That's how they communicated.
Well, we're getting ready to take our final break at this hour, and I wanted once again say that this book, How to Talk to an Alien, is something anyone that is interested in UFOs has to get this book. Really, you have to. And you can't buy one. Here's the reason why you can't buy one. You're going to get so excited when you read this, and you're going to talk to your friends about it, and they're going to say, can I borrow your book? And if you do, if you lend it, you may not ever get it back. So, buy two. Right? You can do that. They're not expensive. But we are going to give away a copy of this book next hour, and then we will repeat the other offer, which is, if you buy this book and you can prove it, you can choose any book that we have. As a matter of fact, we'll do it this way. If you buy two books, you can have two other books of ours or whatever, because that's how important this is. You're going to be thrilled. There's so much material in here that we're never going to have a chance to cover. Then you will be surprised all the way through. And now my boss is saying we better get going here. And, of course, we'll be back with our guest in just a few minutes, Nancy Dutertre, and How to Talk to an Alien.
Talk and breaking news on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Paul Stevens. It is debate time at this hour.